Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. If you're a person who uses Braille, there's a good chance that you've heard about the new Unified English Braille Code by now, often referred to as UEB. This is an attempt to make some of the various Braille codes more consistent.
We'll speak with Jennifer Dunham, chairperson of the Braille Authority of North America, about what prompted these changes to the Braille code, what changes we are likely to see, and what this means for everyday readers of Braille. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Jennifer Dunham.
On the Braille Authority of North America website is actually a document that we call a tips sheet, which is all about the various pieces of technology that are out there and how to make them work with Unified English Braille, and also how to get reading materials available from that. So that's our tip sheet on Unified English Braille.
And is that constant or does that change month to month?
It gets updated from time to time as things change in the technology realm.
Well, we'll put a link to that in our show notes associated with this show. And although the new UEB code isn't that much different than the Braille you're used to seeing, there are some changes, and this is a great resource to see what some of those changes are about and how this might impact the Braille that you're reading.
So, in some sense, this week's tip is just a link to an ongoing source of tips that you can use to help you learn the new Braille code.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
eSight, maker of digital eyewear designed to help improve vision for people with low vision and legal blindness. The technology can be used to read, see faces, and explore the world. More information is available at eSightEyewear.com. Let's start by meeting Jennifer Dunham.
My name is Jennifer Dunham, and I represent the National Federation of the Blind on the Braille Authority of North America. And at the beginning of January 2015, I started my first term as chair of the Braille Authority of North America.
And that's what everybody thinks of as BANA.
Yes, BANA is the acronym.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
I do. I was born totally blind. I'm a lifetime Braille reader. I started learning how to read Braille as a small child, and I've been reading ever since, everything I could get my hands on, either on paper Braille or via refreshable Braille.
So is your position at BANA your day job?
My full-time job, actually, is I'm the manager of Braille programs for the National Federation of the Blind, and we have a contract with NLS to run their courses that lead to certification for Braille transcribers and proofreaders. And so that is my full-time job, is to administer that.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is what's different in the recently adopted Unified English Braille Code from what you may be used to.
So tell us a little bit about what BANA is and what their mission is.
The Braille Authority of North America has been in existence since the 70s, and the mission of the Braille Authority of North America is to assure literacy for tactile readers through the standardization of Braille and/or tactile graphics. Actually, the Braille Authority of North America applies to the United States and to Canada. There are 18 members plus 3 associate members. They're organizations of blind people, educators, Braille producers and transcribers, and the organizations are national in focus.
With representatives of so many organizations that are no doubt spread across North America, how does BANA actually get its work done?
The work of BANA is accomplished primarily through its committees. The board meets twice a year face-to-face and has teleconferences on a quarterly basis. So basically, we have usually about 4 meetings a year, 2 face-to-face and 2 teleconference. But we have technical committees, we have ad hoc committees, and just a bunch of different groups. I would say that there are over 100 people who are actually involved in the work of the Braille Authority of North America.
And I think of BANA as primarily a standards organization that determines how Braille should be written and transcribed. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. And, you know, the standards have changed over time. As anyone sort of a student of the history of Braille knows, for ever since its invention, it has been undergoing different evolutions to meet the various needs. It was invented in France, and when it became the standard for English-speaking countries, there were adaptations that were made, the contractions. Obviously, Louis Braille, who was the inventor of Braille, did not invent the English contractions. Those were invented by folks later on. And as the needs of blind students and basically all the Braille readers have changed over time, as education became more mainstream for blind people, the need for Braille to really show accurately what the print reader is seeing as well has dictated some of the need for the changes.
So we want to get into a little bit more of the details of the new UEB standards, how they came about, why they came about, what improvements they'll be implementing for Braille users. But maybe you can give some of our listeners a little bit of an overview about Braille and why it's a little bit more complex. You mentioned contractions, for example. A lot of people don't know about that. They just think that Braille is bumps on paper and that's it.
Well, I'll be happy to give an overview. Braille is based on a cell, which consists of six dots. So each Braille character is some combination of six dots. And the six dots are arranged in two columns of three dots high. It's three dots high and two dots wide. Now, that means that there are 63 possible combinations of those dots. So therefore, it means that the symbols, there are obviously many more than 63 print symbols. And so we need methods to adapt those characters so that they clearly mean and can be understood to mean what they are intended to mean. So, for example, the letter B is made up of the top two dots in the left column. If you want to show a number two, then you're going to put a numeric indicator in front of that B. It's the second character, if you will. So there's a number sign and then a two, which is the same B character, but it means two because you know that's a number sign in front of it. Braille is larger than print. The characters are much larger. You can fit pretty much about 40 characters across a line in Braille on the wide size paper. And that means that in order to save some space and make the books not come out as large when they are printed onto paper, we have a system of contractions so that there are particular characters that represent combinations of letters. For example, there's an IN character, there's a THE character, and also each letter, if you Braille the letter B by itself, it can stand for the word but in a contraction. The C stands for can, and the D stands for do. There are 189 contractions in the code that is being used up until the end of 2015.
Thank you for the overview of the basics of Braille and the principles of Braille. The reason we asked to talk to you now is because there's big changes to the English Braille system. Can you talk about some of that?
I'll be happy to. We were just talking some about the fact that the two dots at the top left hand of the cell mean the letter B. In some contexts, they can mean the word but when they're by themselves, or a number two when preceded by a numeric indicator. The rules for some of the contexts had become less strict than perhaps they needed to be in order to be translatable and back translatable by computer programs, which is one of the reasons, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. But I do want to say that another big reason for changes to Braille is because there have been really some drastic changes in the way that print looks these days. For example, there are whole new characters that we didn't have 50 years ago even. There are new fonts. Some of it is all just sort of eye candy and visual helps, but some of it is actual symbols that are really needed to understand the content of the material. So print is increasingly changing, and it's also increasingly being read from screens as opposed to on paper. Digital text provides the capability for Braille users to read the material in Braille instantly via refreshable Braille. So it's kind of the equivalent of reading print on a screen. And this has become more ubiquitous as time has gone here. Braille is more widely available than ever before in history because of Braille embossers and translation software and refreshable Braille displays. However, this new technological capability has pointed up some of the problems in the codes that we're currently using for Braille. There are some conflicts within the code that have created inaccuracies when they're back translated. There are some instances where a symbol can mean two different things. And so sometimes if you're brailing it out or back translating it, it'll come out as the opposite symbol that you meant, and therefore you have an inaccurate content.
So you've mentioned back translation several times. Can you describe for our listeners what exactly that is?
I'd be happy to describe back translation. I'll give you an example. I use an iPhone quite frequently, and connected to my iPhone, I have a device that is called a refreshable Braille display. In order to type on that device, I use six keys, which correspond to the six dots of Braille. And when I type into the device using these six keys, I type in contracted Braille. I was talking about the contractions earlier, and I can use those contractions. As soon as I type it, it will come out in print on the iDevice. So, for example, I can send a text message to you. If you don't know Braille, I can type that text message in Braille, and it will come out to you in print. So that is back translation for Braille to print.
So, for example, if you type a space followed by the letter B followed by another space, that comes out as B-U-T on the printed screen, but it shows it's just a single B in Braille.
Yes.
So when you say the words unified English Braille, when I was raised learning Braille, there was a literary Braille for reading a book in literature. There was mathematical Braille for doing math. There was computer Braille for doing some computer things. Does unified mean that these are all now merged into one unified code?
What unified English Braille means is that all of these different genres can be done within unified English Braille. UEB has methods for handling computer programs. We will not need to switch in and out of computer Braille to do email addresses or web addresses any longer. Having said that, however, we do have a math code in the United States that has been used for many decades, which is the Nemeth code. And BANA voted to maintain the Nemeth code and keep the Nemeth code. So that's not going to be going away anytime soon. UEB does have the ability to handle mathematical symbols, but the Nemeth code has such strong support within the United States that we're certainly not going to be eliminating the Nemeth code. Another thing I would say about UEB is it's still Braille. You know, any kind of change to something that is so beloved is sometimes difficult for people to wrap their heads around and difficult for people to accept. People really feel strongly about Braille and its importance, and it is. It's literacy for blind people. And so these changes are an update to the system that we know. UEB is a revision, and it's an extension of the current literary Braille code, which literary Braille, actually, that we use today, the equivalent of the acronym UEB that we use, today's code would be called EBAE, English Braille American Edition. So if you hear me saying EBAE, what I'm talking about is the pre-UEB code, the code that we're using today.
Can you review what some of the changes are going to be in UEB that everybody's going to run into?
Certainly. There is a contraction for the letters COM, as in computer or company, and that contraction is the bottom two dots of the Braille cell. It is the same symbol currently that is used for a hyphen. Now, perhaps in the past, hyphens often did not occur at the beginnings of words as much, but today we know that these symbols can come anywhere in a word. So by eliminating the COM contraction, we get rid of any possible conflicts between hyphens and COMs at the beginning of words. Another example is a contraction for the letters BLE, which is the same symbol that is used for the numeric indicator. Now, more and more in the names of companies and all kinds of contexts, we see numbers that occur in the middle of a word. And so if we have a BLE sign that can also occur in the middle of a word, there is a risk that there could be uncertainty as to whether this is a number or a letter. One funny story that was told to me by a Braille reader is the word bumblebee, when he read it as a child, that BLE sign comes before the letters BEE, which also look like 255 if you think they're numbers. So he would always read it as bum 255. We don't have the BLE sign any longer.
So we're avoiding some of that confusion, especially since symbols like that occurring in the middle of words for email addresses and other things are more common.
That's right. And in back translation, the issue gets even more problematic, because as a human being with our brains, we can usually figure out the context, not always, but usually. But if you're trying to write something out and having a machine figure it out, it doesn't work as well.
Right. A computer really needs a one-to-one association or transformation to get from one to the other.
Correct.
Can you give us some other examples of differences we'll run into?
There are some additional differences beyond just the nine contractions. I want to be sure that people realize there are some other differences. For example, currently in Braille, there are certain words that are written unspaced from each other. And this was done as a space-saving measure back in the days when people's time was less expensive than the paper that they're brailing on. Well, now the spacing issues are less of an issue. So words like of and the, we have typically not put a space between those words, but of and the will now be spaced, and they follow the way that it looks in print, because there's not really a particular need for a Braille reader to have to learn this specific rule that is not like print and could result in some quirky printing if you're typing something out on a computer.
Yes, and you've talked about, you know, people being accustomed to using the Braille the way they've been using it for many, many years. And I sort of felt that way myself with the newest version of my screen reader. They offer a choice to use UEB. And I decided, well, you know, let me try it out. And sure, it was a little bit different, but, you know, just by using it, I forced myself to become accustomed with it. It's not so different that you can't read it, but you do notice some changes, and it does make some things a little bit nicer. I'm noticing more now that I can tell the difference between parentheses, brackets, and braces, which often occur in messages and email sites that I go to. So that's kind of a nice thing. And so I'm noticing some nice little touches where it really does make things a little less ambiguous.
It is. You know, I'm glad you mentioned the parentheses. Those are one of my favorite things about UEB. They look so much more, they're rounded like print parentheses, and you can tell which direction they go. I have been trying very hard to read exclusively in Unified English Braille for the last 3 years, just because I want to be sure that I know what I'm talking about when people ask me things. And, you know, if I'm going to be providing leadership or encouraging people to do something, I don't want to ask people to do something I'm not willing to do. And so I've been reading UEB for 3 years, and it hasn't slowed down my reading at all. Now, when I write Braille, it comes out in UEB. If somebody wants me to Braille something in EBAE, I have to stop and think about it and fix mistakes. My brain has switched over.
Just through using something consistently, you get used to it. The change isn't that scary after all.
That's correct. Yes.
We've been talking about deleting some old contractions to improve clarity and remove ambiguity. What other changes are coming with UEB?
There are a few other changes. One example is the ability to show more types of font attributes. As things stand today, a lot of the font attributes, whether it's bold or underline or anything like that, mostly it's all shown as italics in Braille. Just to keep things simple, it's just the way the rule has been for quite some time. Now we will have the ability to tell the difference between whether something is underlined, whether it's bolded, whether it's italics, whether it's written in script. There are specific symbols to show these things. Another change that is interesting to me as a person who has a strong interest in foreign languages is the ability to show different types of accent marks. Up to now, pretty much, if you wanted to show an accent on a letter, you just put a dot four, which is the top right-hand dot in the cell. You would place that before the letter, and it would mean whatever accent there was. Well, now we will have the ability to show the difference between the acute accent above the letter, the sedia below the letter. They're just all different kinds of accents that we as blind people need to know about as well. As we talked about earlier, the parentheses will be different. There are some different rules about when to use some of the contractions. There are other symbols that are changed. Most of the punctuation will stay the same, though. There's one change that I think is pretty excellent. Up to now, if you wanted to show that all the letters in a word are in uppercase, you would place two dots before that word, two of the bottom right-hand dot in the cell. And it didn't matter how many words in a row were in uppercase. You had to place those two dots before each and every word. So if you had a whole book in capitalized letters, wow, it was going to be a lot of dot sixes. So now there it will be a method to show a capitalized passage so that if you have three or more words that are all in uppercase, you just place three of those dot sixes before the first word, and there's a symbol at the end of the passage to show the capitalization has ended.
So if you're adding all of these new symbols, there's still only 63 dot combinations plus the blank. How do you manage to add additional symbols with the same number of dot combinations? Or are these all multiple cell symbols?
It's an excellent question. Many of the symbols are multiple cell symbols. What's great about Unified English Braille is that the rules for how a symbol can be constructed have become much more rigid and clear. Up to now, symbols weren't always constructed according to hard and fast rules, and so that's kind of how we got into some of the conflicts. Now, there are certain dot combinations that can only ever be a prefix, that is, a character that comes at the beginning of a symbol but doesn't mean anything by itself. So there are eight prefixes. And so that means that there are eight prefixes and all the rest are what's known as roots, but you can have multiple prefixes before any of the symbols. So that means you've got a really extensible system in which you can add all kinds of new symbols.
And then it'll be obvious to the reader that this is going to be a multi-character symbol because it has one of these specific prefix cells.
That's correct.
So we're beginning to see some of these changes in our screen readers and how we read Braille. Can you talk about how this is being implemented and how this gets into our new technologies?
Unified English Braille has been built in and been part of a number of software and programs and refreshable Braille devices for some years because other countries adopted it long before the United States of America did. So, for example, in our Braille note devices, it's already built in so that you can switch it. A user can switch from English Braille American Edition to Unified English Braille and can read their material that way. I think it was about 2 years ago that Apple made it possible to use Unified English Braille as well. Other screen readers and other devices are working on it. And the implementation of it within software and devices is not across the board perfect yet. Many are doing a great job. Many are still working on it. Everyone's is working toward it. And once we have sort of a smooth, consistent experience, it's going to help everyone.
How easy do you expect it to be for people to use legacy materials? You know, you mentioned Bard, and they've got mountains of material that's been brailled up in the old system. And so if you request a book from them, you're very likely to get it in the old system. Are there specific plans for dealing with the legacy materials, or is that just going to be easy for people to switch back and forth for a while?
I'm really glad you asked that because I think it's one of the questions that was a real fear for people as we were having the conversation about whether we should do this. What's going to happen to all the old Braille books? Are they just going to get rid of all the old Braille books? And the answer to that is no, that the old Braille books will still be around. Most people these days who know Braille, that's how we read. And so it's not going to be an issue for us. The children nowadays, when they learn Braille, if they learn exclusively in Unified English Braille, if we tell kids, we say, you know, the Braille that you're going to see, there may be some additional contractions and you make sure that people know those contractions. It shouldn't be an issue.
Now for this week's final item, how you can learn more about the new Unified English Braille Code.
Where can people go to learn a little bit more about UEB and the character sets and contractions involved?
people who want to learn more about Unified English Braille, there are numerous resources for that, for self-study. The Hadley School has a course that can be taken by Braille readers to learn more. There are instructional materials for teachers, for transcribers, and many of those materials can be found on the Braille Authority of North America's website, which is www.brailleauthority.org.
So I actually saw some nice demonstration pages you had there showing some of the differences between the old style Braille and the new UEB style Braille. And I thought that was very informative to see what some of the changes were right on my own home here without having to take a course.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important point. The average Braille reader is not going to need to take a course to learn how to read in Unified English Braille. Mostly, if you already know Braille, you're going to pick it up and you're going to say, oh my goodness, the COM contraction isn't used in this. It won't be as if it's a whole new code for you to learn how to read. It's just going to be some differences that you will notice. The best starting place to go to find more information about Unified English Braille, not only to see samples, but to read about implementation progress and other things like that, is to start with the BANA website, which is www.brailleauthority.org. Also on that page, you can find instructions for signing up for BANA Announce, which is a one-way email listserv that shares news and information from BANA. BANA also has a Facebook page. It also has a Twitter handle, which is at Braille Authority, how original. Braille Authority of North America is very interested in people's feedback and questions, and we're glad to have you follow us on Facebook and Twitter and sign up for the announcements, etc.
We have listeners all over the world, and BANA is for North America. Do you also have links to similar organizations in other countries on the BrailleAuthority.org website?
There are links like that through the International Council on English Braille. We do have a link to ICEB on the BANA website, but if people want directly to go to that site, it is www.iceb.org.
And if people have questions that they want to ask, how can they submit questions and get answers?
You can send a question to chair@brailleauthority.org. There is also kind of a comment box on the BANA website that allows you to put in a comment or a question there, and you'll get an answer from that.
Is there a phone number for Braille readers who maybe aren't interested in going online and doing email?
Yes. For those who would prefer to do a phone call, you can call 612-767-5658.
And in case you're looking for any of those resources, go to our show notes webpage at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1549. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the Dot Braille smartwatch. At times, it would be convenient for blind people to be able to interact with their smartphones silently without disturbing others using speech feedback. The Braille display on the new Dot Watch now makes that possible. We'll speak with Eric Kim, the founder and CEO of Dot, about what makes this watch special and how it works. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.